Fight!
Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name is Nolan.
And this is episode 55. Simple, straightforward question to start the podcast this week. What is your all-time favorite online multiplayer game? And Zvi, is it your favorite? All right, so this is everything from Overwatch to Team Fortress, Rocket League to Diablo.
I won't answer it because of the second part.
Go ahead.
You gotta say it right. My favorite online multiplayer game is StarCraft.
Big surprise.
And not we know this. Like, this is established. It. I'm just resigning myself to Dustin's ridiculousness.
StarCraft 1 or 2?
Original, vanilla.
All right, so we've played that as a part of our podcast?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we have, actually.
All right, and so any particular reasons why it's your favorite?
Oh, my goodness, because it's the best real-time strategy game of all time.
Is it? Even better than this week's game?
Yes.
Nolan, what's your favorite online multiplayer game?
That is tough. A couple things come to mind, some embarrassing. I don't know, because, like, it changes. I'm not.
Tamagotchi doesn't count as online if you plug it into your friend system.
Or multiplayer.
It's multiplayer.
Yeah, or game.
Okay. So, I almost want to say RuneScape.
That's a good one.
It's embarrassing, I know. But I had some good times back in the day on RuneScape, and
I feel like you're slightly closer to, like, vaping than I thought you were.
That's such a good comparison.
That's why he didn't want to say RuneScape. It's just got that rep. I don't even know why.
No, I love that. That's funny. But no, if you would have played it, it's like the poor man's WoW. It's like the poor man's anything, but
it was a lot before WoW, though.
It's old. The old school RuneScape, like Alpha, is very old, but I think it is fun, and
And that's why it's your favorite.
Nope.
My favorite was actually, I thought about it. I'm not a huge online multiplayer game. I play some Overwatch now with some of my pals, just Nolan. But my favorite probably of all time was World of Warcraft. It was a good game. And I mean, Zvi, you ask, like, I haven't played it in almost a decade, but when I did, I had
this
a blast.
This is so painful.
Like, create an RPG that I can play with friends, obtain sick gear, and have the threat of dying and losing it all. And I feel like, for me, that was a recipe for a lot of fun.
And all for the cost of free.
World of Warcraft wasn't free.
You're right. It's way too expensive. So none of that was worth it.
Well, I may or may not have sold my account at the end of my 2 years of playing and gotten all my money back. So
all of it? All of it? Really?
Yeah.
Let me hear a price.
No, we'll have to talk about it off air, but maybe $250.
Lawsuits.
Interesting.
Those are our favorite online multiplayer games. We would be interested in hearing yours as well, so tweet us this week and let us know your selection, and Zvi, you chose it. In the meantime, we will talk about our retro game of the week, and Zvi or Zvi not, we liked it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy episode 55, Herzog, Why?
Wait, what?
Overview.
I think you're mispronouncing it. I think it's Herzog Zwei.
No, I pretended to practice German this week just so I could get this right. Herzog Zwei is a real-time strategy game released for the Sega Genesis exclusively by Technosoft. Came out in the very late 80s and is a real-time strategy game, which is a pretty unique genre of game for consoles in general, but especially for the Sega Sys. Sega Genesis. The Sega Sys?
Sega Sys? Okay.
That's what we call it, those of us who really know.
Yeah, vape smokers.
Yeah, the Sega Genesis really had a rep for being, like, you know, kind of an arcade-feeling, like, console. I don't know. And so this title was pretty unique. I think pretty unique. Not just like, when you even look at games that it may have borrowed from versus games that it ended up having some kind of influence on, this really was a pretty groundbreaking real-time strategy game title. Herzog's Vi is German, for those of you who are confused, and it basically means, like, Commander 1 or, like... Commander 2, where...
Yeah, definitely Herzog, not 1.
What's 1 in German, Dustin?
Eins.
Herzog Eins would be, like, Commander 1. And the idea being that you are the second in command of this army and rebellion, trying to take over for to dethrone the corrupt Herzog Eins. I give up on the German, though.
Sehr gut, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. As a real-time strategy game, it doesn't have lots of kind of story elements, but what you do is you are a fighting mech, basically, that flies around as a ship. You use bases to spend resources to build additional units for your army that is attacking. Those resources you can control and tell, you know, to attack a base, to defend a position, to patrol a position, a number of things. Both building resources and giving commands to those resources costs money. And you gain more money more quickly by holding more, like, sub-bases that are capturable and something you can fight for and take over throughout the map.
I'm glad that you got the overview this week, because you are a big RTS guy, right? Like, you enjoy these kinds of games?
Absolutely. I'm a huge RTS fan. Which most of the time.
The opposite for me, because they are unbelievably stressful to me.
This week was probably tough on you then.
Yeah, I seriously need a game like where in battle I can not pause, but I can just put the controller down for about 15 minutes, think out what I'm going to do, and then do the next attack. Like, that's
right.
That's where I thrive, and you enjoy, like, thinking on the fly. And Nolan, are you, like, somewhere in the middle? Like, I know you kind of like RTS at times as well, right?
I land in the middle. Like, there's some games that I prefer over others, StarCraft being one of them, but... outside of that, I'm a little picky. I like turn-based strategy, so I'm kind of like you. I feel that stress too.
You're a big Age of Empires fan, though.
I like the game too. I don't play it a lot, though. I mean, it's fun to play with
sure.
friends.
It's not like your go-to genre or anything.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, and far from mine. But it is your go-to genre, right, Kenny?
Often that or yeah. It's one of my favorite genres. I mean, I've got lots of games I like.
Which leads me, I want us to talk, before we get into our discussion proper, can we just talk about what makes a good real-time strategy? For a second, put Herzog's Vi out of your mind, and let's just talk about RTS in general. What makes a good RTS?
You need constant but important but understandable decision-making. So most RTSs tend to be, like, resource-driven. They don't have to be.
Right.
But there's that sort of constant choice of, do I do more resources or less resources?
Which this wasn't heavy on.
It wasn't real heavy on this one at all. You also need some kind of actual strategy. You know, you need to be able to see what the other person is doing and do something to counter that, or do something to adapt to that, or do something to answer that. And that needs to be willing to sort of go back and forth. It really needs to feel like a dance in my
mind.
That's
a really good illustration. Let me ask you this. For a good RTS, does it need unique character types? Not just unit types. Does it need unique...
race?
Or different race. Yeah, you've got a different type of character or team that you can play.
With strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, and different units and everything within that. And I feel like in a lot of RTSs, you have that. In Herzog's Vi, you don't. Your team is identical to the team that you're playing.
Sure. I don't know that it's mandatory for a good real-time strategy in general. It sure is nice for replayability, for variety, for creativity, but...
But you're fine with... an RTS not having that.
Yeah.
I do think a good RTS needs that variety, because, like you said, Dustin, this one, you you're playing against the same team, essentially. Sure, there's different strategies, and you have to react. I mean, RTS is reaction-based genre, but I think the class difference, the race difference, needs to be there. For me, it does, because it just adds that extra layer of, okay, I get to play a certain way, and you're going to do your thing, but I'm going to try and counter that. I mean, it makes it harder, too, though.
Yeah, there's pros and cons for sure. But I like to just be a good game. Like, I don't think it has to have it. It's very nice, for sure. It adds a lot of benefits doing something like that. But it also adds a lot of challenges in terms of balance and those kind of things. In a game like this, though, obviously you're playing against a computer. Oh, you don't have to be. You could actually be sitting down with two controllers playing against someone, but we couldn't through this week. You literally have exactly the same situation, and so it puts you on a level playing ground, and means the decisions you make end up being the difference between winning or losing.
Gameplay!
So the gameplay here is a little chaotic, but it's straightforward and your basic controls. So, like Kenny said, you're in control of a mech, and that's pretty cool. You fly around a map. You have your main base that you can like pull up your menu to spawn your units, and you will need to do that, but you can free roam around the map. So the camera is a top-down view locked onto your mech. And as you move across the map, the camera moves with you, so you're always in the center. And you can transform into like a ground unit. It's like a transformer, and you can shoot lasers, and you can pick up units and move them on the map. So that's how you are distributing your team. Comparing it to PC RTS, so StarCraft, just for example's sake, like you're clicking on the map. You're right clicking, you're left clicking and dragging to highlight some units, tell them to go here, and you're menuing a lot. Well, there's menuing in this game, but being on console, you don't have the convenience of a mouse, so you are actually flying everywhere, and it is chaotic. I don't know about you guys, but it added another layer of stress for me.
Yeah, it's definitely chaotic. Let's not skip over. It's important to note that you've got your two different forms. You're a futuristic jet that flies and transports units, or you're your ground unit. But while you're in the sky, you cannot attack enemy units. You must transform to ground unit to be able to do damage to other ground units or structures.
You can attack air units, so basically the opposition's, mech.
Yeah, and so, it becomes extremely chaotic, because one of the things that took me a long time to figure out, longer than I'd like to admit, is that it's okay if you, as your character, explodes and dies, loses health, runs out of energy, because is what happens is you explode into a million pieces, but a few seconds later, you reform at your base, and then you begin again.
Yeah, you've got infinite response.
You just start again.
Yeah. It doesn't cost you anything except the time.
Yeah, so that's part of the strategy.
Very like, forgiving.
Go out, stay out, do as much as you can.
Yeah.
You know, be destroyed, come back, regroup, rebuild, do it all over again.
Yeah, no shame in that. And you mentioned you have an energy level. So that's kind of the resource in this game, but not really. Like, you're not...
It's one of a few resources.
Yeah, you're not technically spending it, but as you're doing things and you're in your plane, it's depleting. And so you've got to manage that, or else once that's gone, that's another respawn. So you can, like, die or run out of energy.
And to add to the chaos, that's not the only thing. Like, there are about 12 bars, I feel like, at the top of the screen.
It's too much.
And you see, to be fair, you see both yours and your enemies, but there are way too many meters.
It's just one letter telling you what it is.
Right.
Like, I had
so you
no
don't
clue.
Know unless you read the handbook. Thank you, Kenny, for sending it to us this week, because I would have been helpless.
Yeah, this is one of those games that I tried to play without it, you know? Like a lot of games, I assumed I could sit down, turn it on, power it up, play.
And there's no way.
And I walked in and was just so utterly confused. You know, I flew around the map a little bit and learned that my jet could turn into a human and vice versa, and I could shoot things.
Not even.
I had no idea beyond that, because I was just hitting buttons.
Guys, you could have just hovered your mouse over the thing and it would give you a description of what's going on.
You hold your console in front of the TV, your controller in front of the TV screen.
For a second, I was really confused when you said that. I was like, what did I miss?
No, no, it's bad. Games? Like, it throws you into the middle of it, but there's no description. And
it's not.
This keeps happening. It's like the third game in a week where I'm just so lost. And yeah. Also, I didn't know Kenny sent us that. I must have missed that message. So, I had to go.
Oh,
find
it was
it
real
myself.
Helpful.
Yeah. Oh, at least you found something.
I looked it up. I just needed to know what those letters meant. The base damage and the energy and all that.
Yeah, it's very important. And first thing that I did, or one of the earliest things that I did that actually helped a lot was when I began my first round, I chose widescreen and was completely lost. And then I went a second round and was able to change it to split screen so that I could see on the right hand side of the screen what the enemy was doing the entire time. So it felt a bit like cheating, but at least it helped me understand a little bit more clearly what in the world I should be doing.
Absolutely. That's actually really wise. I never did that. I watched some of the like example play where things are done in split screen and it kind of like shows you what's going on. And it did have a little bit of that, I think, to try and like in the base menu, you know, if you just like let it sit there, it will play through some things, which was helpful sort of as an attempt to kind of explain what was going on. But this is one that unless you had a friend to teach you or the book beside you or a whole summer
of
you know, mashing your head against figuring out what does what, it's a pretty high learning curve, at least for just sitting down and picking up a game and playing it.
So you've got like 8 maps, I think?
Yeah, 8 levels.
Yeah, there was a great diversity of levels, which was awesome.
Each one with unique music, too, which I
thought
was
great diversity
pretty
of
sweet.
Music.
Spectacular.
And good music.
Good music, I will say.
Very good music. That was right away, before I even got into a game, the music that came on at the title screen, I'm like, okay, wow.
Yeah, I was impressed for sure. And this game came out so early on the Genesis, too. We got to keep that in mind.
Right, this is late 80s.
And then for each of those 8 levels as well, you've got 4 different difficulties for each.
Which I did not go past A.
Right, so, no,
yeah,
no way.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of gameplay there. Multiple hours of gameplay.
Yeah, this is one that if you got sucked into, you could play a lot. And it's not like a lot of RTSs, it's not super fast paced. You know, you're not just tearing through a level. Like each level you're investing some time in.
Yeah, it takes about 15 to 20 minutes if you're efficient to get to win, but you've got to be like good at the game to do that.
And then if you're me, it takes about an hour and a half to lose.
Yeah, right. I won one time, but I was using like hardcore strats. But which map did you guys play?
I played a couple different ones, but the one I spent the most time on was the like first one, just because it felt pretty
Abgrund.
Understandable. Yeah, Abgrund or whatever.
Yeah, completely unfamiliar with the names. I did that one, but I was first drawn to one of the later ones that looked a lot more techno-based, like very futuristic.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so a lot of diversity with your levels too, which not only in size, but in look and feel.
Yeah, and there's terrain, unique terrain. Well, not unique, but like...
No, terrain that you have to interact with and that you have to change your strategy around.
Yeah.
Where it's placed and which units you get and how you send them to accomplish their goals. And this is one of those games that I was going to say seems simple and ends up being really complex, but doesn't even really seem that simple. Looks simple. Like, you know, when you like pull it up, that first like fighter jet, and it almost feels like it's going to be arcadey, you know, throwing around and be more of a like shooter, a tactical kind of thing. But when you start learning that you've got to manage your energy resources, where your units are, where your enemy's units are, the terrain, whether your units need resupply, the health of what's going on, the number of income you actually have, which bases you've taken and which you haven't, and literally do all that with one kind of static mouse, you know, in that you have this control unit that is your ship that's right in the middle of the screen. But you can't select multiple things at a time. Literally every action you want to do, you have to put in individually. It ends up being a very complex game with lots of like micromanagement to really get into playing it well.
Aged.
See, my thing with this is that I've seen the kind of graphics that Genesis can produce, and Herzog 2, I feel, pales in comparison to some of these other titles that were released on the same console around the same time that this game was released.
Like what?
Like the graphics didn't impress me at all.
Yeah, because you're right. That's one of the things we always talk about in these Genesis games. We're always like, well, great graphics, good backdrop. Yeah, I agree. It's very grainy is how I would describe it. It's kind of super pixelated.
They weren't shiny to me. Like, it wasn't like pretty. I wasn't like blown away by it. And there's some games that we are, but I also didn't like miss it. I felt like it had sort of a kind of classically simple arcade retro look. And again, maybe that some of it is like playing a game now, looking back versus playing the game then. The Genesis definitely had the ability to do more. But I felt like for what you were trying to do, that wasn't a big deal to me in this case. Yeah.
And I will say, although not the best, the graphics do get the point across as far as terrain. Like, I was never wondering.
Yeah, you can always see
what
what's going
this
on.
Was, you know, I was
you
like,
can even
okay,
tell
this is an
what,
island.
Which unit is which. You know, once you become familiar with them, which I'm
which
still not by the end of the week. Yeah, you just there's lots of them, and again, high learning curve.
But what I'm saying there is that, like, even, what was it, Vector Man? Like, it had the backgrounds of that game, and the richness and color was, although I disliked that game very significantly, those things stood out as impressive on this. Like, you knew it was a Genesis title by looking at it.
It
I
definitely
did not
has less,
know that this is a Genesis title by looking at it.
Yeah, I'd agree. It definitely has less of that, like, iconic Genesis look in my mind.
Now, one of the things that it did do well and carried over, and we mentioned it briefly, but guys, the music is phenomenal. Seriously.
Absolutely.
Like,
I know, I'm impressed.
High quality music.
Mm-hmm. And like the ability, as much as the majority of the game is like go into the game and just play it, it even recognizes that by giving you a menu option to go through and just like listen to each of those tracks just on their
oh,
own.
Oh yeah, I noticed that.
And
yeah.
it totally had kind of a like almost like games today, like a Rocket League or something, that let you almost have a radio station playing where you can sort of pick the tune. It sort of had that going on. I mean, even Tetris back in the day, you could pick a music theme, but it was just a few. And the diversity of this and the quality of that music really yeah. kind of blew my mind for the kind of game it was.
It's just cool that they were like, yeah, we know this music is awesome. Here you go.
Right.
Like, you can listen to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Very impressed by that. One other thing that bothered me in regards to its age is the menuing. I felt like that was the weakest point of the entire game, and yeah. I would have enjoyed the game a whole lot more if it was self-explanatory within the game.
I agree.
Got when you go to your menu, and see, you can't even stay in your menu long. You feel pressured to quickly get that taken care of so you can get back because it's real-time strategy. There's no pausing. But you have no idea what you're looking at when you go into your menu. You've got little figures, letters that who knows still what they stand for.
Letters, dash, and numbers. Very
dash
intimidating.
Numbers. And then so you can find out what your money is, and it's fluctuating all the time. But you've got just letters is all that represents. Letters and numbers is
Absolutely.
All that represents everything in this game. And so I figured this out. When you purchase your units, you can set where you want them, whether you want them to stay and defend or if you want them to go towards the enemy base and attack. I think you set that as you purchase them.
You do.
But there's nothing that's only determined by a little icon. That's all.
No.
Menuing is rough for sure.
The interface there is really, really, really terrible.
As far as the fluidity of it, I felt fine maneuvering on the map. But it being an RTS lends itself to frequent menuing and in-depth menuing. And so it interrupted the fluidity of like being able to go across the map. And I can see that being a perk for some, just like macro managing and loving that. Like, I could see Kenny enjoying that. But for me, it interrupted that just fluidity of moving across the map.
No, I'd agree. I wish there were one or both. It's tough because when you talk about real-time strategy, again, so much of our view of real-time strategy has been RTS games on the computer, and your ability to navigate a menu is completely different. And so I think that they did an admirable job of trying, to create a game where you really could just have one sort of main unit that you controlled, and by like going out and fighting and then going into a base, I felt like that was a good answer to it, even by picking up units and moving them around as a way of sort of controlling map position was fine as an idea. But I agree, Dustin. The interface was completely unintuitive, and it took me way too long to actually figure out what was going on. If it had literally just been like money, this amount, movement, you know, this amount, they could have made it way more self-explanatory, and this game would have been a lot more appealing, especially on like a first playthrough or on a playthrough, you know, where you're not investing a lot of time into it.
What do you guys think about the age of, as far as like the objective at hand? So, I mean, all RTS, yes, destroy their base. That's the main goal. And I guess this is mostly for you, Kenny, since you're familiar with the genre. What did you think about like going up against another mech and then having to destroy that base? Do you think that was like that they did a good job with that, or they should have added more map objectives?
I was okay with it. I thought it worked. I think there's already so much complexity going on that you couldn't add a lot more.
That's a good point.
You know?
Because I was about to say, it seems like they could have gone a little deeper with like, okay, what do you need to do on this map besides just kill their base and their units?
Sure.
But you're right. There is a lot going on already.
Yeah, again, you're just very limited by like the literal number of inputs you can put in.
Which I think just goes to kind of show the limitations of this game when it came out in 89 and how it's translated over to today's standards of gaming.
The final shell shock.
Which brings us to the question that we always arrive at the conclusion of each of our episodes. Do you give this game your vote for new game plus status? Yes or no, and Svi or Svi not?
So yeah, this music just is good enough for me to like want to play this game because it really is quality, and I was so blown away. I was not expecting that, especially from this title. Just checking it out and us joking about it on last episode, like, what is this? Yeah, total surprise. And also the people who developed it, I'm like, what's the Thunder Force series and why should I care? But yeah, music's great. I did think that it was easy to play as far as controls, and I mean, that was intuitive, being able to move around. Yeah, it was hard to figure out the menuing and the units themselves and how to approach winning a game. I also love the variety of the maps. You have 8 maps, each one with 4 difficulties, with unique music, with different terrain, different objectives, and, well, not different objectives, but different terrain and the way you're approaching.
Is there a butt coming up? Is there a butt?
But.
It's a big butt.
Yeah. I didn't have fun with the game, and I would not give it New Game Plus. I don't think it's fun.
That's
for some reason.
It's massive. Yeah. Ultimately, that has to be a huge part of how we decide anything.
Yeah.
Right.
I respect the game. Respect the crap out of the game. It's awesome. It's a great idea. I think they executed it fairly well. I just didn't have fun. So I wouldn't say go back and play it.
Yeah. I feel like Nolan and I had exactly inverted experiences. I actually came in with fairly high expectations, wanting to see how they did an RTS on the console. And then after the early initial, like, oh, this is cool movement, this is cool sound, the frustration of learning the game and some of those difficulties of getting into it were so high, I kept turning on this game knowing I wanted to play it, thinking I would like it, playing a little bit, turning it off, like, consistently throughout the week. But finally, by the end of the week,
something clicked.
I started to finally actually feel like the interface was getting natural, where I wasn't having to think about which buttons to bring things up. Like, I'd overcome the, like, learn the menus mini game, you know, and maybe it's more than a mini game. Maybe that is this game.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
The actual game is the mini game.
I still wasn't even, like, good at the game. I only got to really a point where I could, like, sort of break even with the computer and, you know, could have started winning games after, like, losing a bunch and being confused and just failing utterly the first couple of times I played through. And I started to actually have a lot of fun with this game. It's not a surprise knowing, you know, that it's RTS and whatever. But, and yeah, you're right. My butt is a small butt. There's huge hurdles here that you definitely have to get over. That's going to be quoted. I know.
That's what I'm laughing at.
It made sense in context. Viewers, don't judge me. You know, like, I had lots of problems with it. Halfway through this week, I really thought we were going to get on this episode, and I was going to spend the episode just reaming this game out because of how frustrated I was. But given enough time, it finally got to where I was playing the game and not just learning the game. And at that point, I really did have fun. And two, it's a very influential game. When you look at where it falls in the history of real-time strategy, with their creative things they do with level design and variety, trying to have some AI that sort of makes sense for at this point in time is pretty good, even though it really is terrible AI. This is 1989. You know, different levels to beat. I felt like overall this was an important enough game and had enough good things that if you got over some things, it's worth playing. So I'm going to somewhat conflictedly give this game New Game Plus for me.
All right, so that's a no from Nolan. That's a yes from Kenny. And I'll save the anticipation and just say that that is a clear no from me. And instead of just reservedly giving my opinion, allow me to lambast this game for just a few seconds. I thoroughly disenjoyed it. Is disenjoy a word?
Sure.
It is now.
It is now.
I thoroughly disenjoyed this game. Not in large part, I will admit, just because of my resistance and my hesitation towards RTS. I'm not good at them. They stress me out. Unless I'm very familiar and I've spent a lot of time with the game, Age of Empires 2, then I typically do not like this genre. However, I spent a significant amount of time playing this game this week and felt like I was just getting worse and worse and getting more and more confused, whereas Kenny and Nolan seem to understand and get a grasp of it the more they played, which is, I mean, that's most video games. For whatever reason, in my experience, was the reverse. The more and more I played it, the more confusing I got, the more frustrated I got, and the more I just could not accomplish or achieve anything. And so while the music was good, and maybe that's about it for me, that's about the only thing that I enjoyed and liked, and it's really, really good music, so I give the music New Game Plus status, and I would never give the game itself New Game Plus status. Do not play it. That's two no's. It does not receive our New Game Plus status.
That's fair. Even not getting it officially, this is a great game for people to go at least look up and read about. Really was a very influential title and is worth at least being familiar with. And this is one that I think if they went back and did a remake and created a PC-based version of the game where you, like, controlled your fighter with a mouse and could control your units and it had an interface that made sense and you could do really creative tactical things, there's a couple things that you could take this game and polish it and get over the humps, and I think it would just be absolutely phenomenal.
Well, then, guys, you can check as soon as we're done recording this. On November 8th of 2012, Carbon Games released Air Mech, which was a spiritual successor to Herzog Zwei, and it is modernized graphics. It's pretty much identical gameplay, just with some added features, online multiplayer, and the game is completely free to play online through the Google Chrome Web Store or Steam or some other things like that, and it actually looks a lot better. I don't know if they captured the music feel there, but you can go play it right now if you'd like.
The interesting things for me would be if they, like, changed the interface in important kinds of ways, because that's the thing that really makes or breaks this game in people's minds. And I think in you guys' minds, mostly, is what broke it.
We didn't receive much communication from viewers this week. I don't know if it was a difficult game for them to get a hold of, or if it was just one that they weren't interested in playing. But we did get a message from Parallax. He said the Mega Drive / Genesis had such a fantastic library with incredible depth overall, whether in terms of gameplay and or content, including mini games with cool concepts like the Road Rash series, Gyaris, Echo, Toe Jam and Earl, and even here with Herzog Zwei. I'm not sure if the game holds up well according to today's standards, but it was an interesting play nonetheless.
The Mega Drive and Genesis did have a great catalog of games. Very vast and some very weird and not good, but it did have some classics in there.
I feel like even the good ones, though, are weird. Like, I feel like this is just a weird console
that
spawned unique games.
That's why I love
Which is great, especially when you look at the influence a lot of those games have had. You know what I mean? Yeah. I feel like it was the console that was, like, doing unique creative things at the time. And I'm all for that.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Thank you for your commentary. And if you are a viewer listening to this podcast now, please, any time, any week that we play a new game, play along with us and then send in your commentary. I know just the nature of podcasts makes that difficult at times because you might not listen to this particular episode until November of 2020. Still send us your thoughts. We'll probably not include it in our future episode, but still, it's something that we can communicate on. We'll send you messages back and we'll talk about that particular game.
Dustin, our viewers also need to know they can still add to our Retro Master list if they want to see us play a specific game. And it's pretty easy. All you have to do is ask, like this. Hey, Dustin, will you add Dune 2 to the Retro Master list?
Hey, never, Kenny.
Now that I've got the on-console RTS bug, that's the one everyone says is the best. I know it's a classic title. I never played it.
Yeah, and neither will we.
If you had your way.
We're not going to randomly select this week.
Dude, why?
That's rude.
Zwei. Because we have a
joke again.
We actually have a special guest joining us on the podcast next week.
Sweet.
We are stoked to have a rabbit joining us.
Just
sounded like I said a rabbit.
Just a random rabbit. It's actually your pet rabbit, Ozma.
Ozma is going to be sitting here with us next week. No, we are having Rabbit, who is a retro gamer who has a Let's Play YouTube channel that she is nearing 1,000 uploaded videos. Guys, that's
awesome.
A lot of content.
That is a lot
really
of content.
Is.
Goodness.
So check her out this week on our YouTube channel. I mean, you can open up YouTube and search Rabbit Gaming, Rabbit Retro Gaming, Rabbit Let's Plays, and you'll be able to find her and some of her channels. Right now, she's going through a game that I actually had a demo disc of for PlayStation, Legends of Legaia, and just a really cool concept of her channel, and we're super excited to have her on the show. The game that we are going to be playing, she selected it. Guys, do you mind sharing?
It is Super Mario RPG.
Which I'm very interested in. Nolan, do you know I've never played this game?
Yeah, neither have I.
I have played it some, and it's surprisingly awesome.
Right, that is what I've heard, not just from you, but I've heard from others.
From
and I know
people whose opinions you actually believe.
Right, like Kenny. No, I don't know what to expect. I mean,
it's
I've watched some
for
gameplay,
sure. Yeah.
And but it's an ARP. Is it a legit RPG?
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I believe it's an RPG.
It's a legit RPG with Mario and all the characters from Mario. It's great.
Crazy.
And it's for the Super Nintendo. And it's going to be a big game to play. So hopefully all of our viewers take some time and play it.
Definitely. Do connect with us this week on social media, Facebook and Twitter at NGP Podcast. You can listen directly on all the podcast providers. Would you take a moment and if you haven't yet, subscribe to us. Don't just enter the feed into your podcast app on your phone. Go ahead and go to iTunes or SoundCloud and subscribe. And then if you'd like to, leave a review and write some nice things about our podcast. That really helps with visibility. If you would like to support us, you can do so by visiting us at patreon.com/NGP podcast, and you can like so many other of our viewers, become a true part of the NGP family, which grants you some additional content on a fairly regular basis.
And it's also a great way to enable us to continue to make new and continue to make better things. So thank you to every one of our Patreon supporters, whether you give a little or a lot. As always, special thanks to Bradley, our producer of this week's episode. Couldn't do it without you. Really, you viewers who listen and interact with us in any way, whether that's an email, a message, just by thinking about how much you love us while you're driving down the road, we appreciate all of you.
Yeah, or as you're falling asleep at night. I also
that one's creepier, but I also like it.
I also want to thank my sister-in-law Courtney for providing her voice for the segment dividers this week.
Thanks, Courtney.
What?
Yeah, she's in town, and so she listens to the podcast faithfully and has no clue about video games whatsoever. And so I thought, hey, why not have her? And we were sitting at a table over dinner, and she said overview, and I was like, okay, so how about you record our dividers this week?
Oh,
so
I can't wait.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
So now that you're at the end of this episode, you've heard her voice multiple times, wondered what in the world that's all about. Well, there you go. That's what it's all about.
The final shell shock.
Join us next week as Kenny's like, wait, what?
Wait,
and we say that because Kenny's never listened to our podcast, never once.
One time when we were signing off, he did our outro music, but it was like wrong.
I didn't actually do our outro
not
music.
Not even close.
I just sang out a generic outro.
Kenny actually doesn't even know we're on a podcast right now. He just thinks we get together week by week and talk.
Like a book club.
They pay me in popcorn to show up and play video games, so I do it.
Join us next week as we play Super Mario RPG. I'm stoked about that one. Until then, I'm Dustin.
I'm still Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this
has been
New
Game
Plus. I said nude.
Yeah, cut that out.